You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live to the cosmos from the backyard at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's March 27th, 2012. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. We're here on the Heritage Radio Network in the back of Roberta's in Bushwick. And I'm thinking about country because I got my buddy Dave Broderick here today.
Hey, Jimmy.
Who owns Blind Tiger, but you're really a Vermont guy now, aren't you?
Pretty much three quarters of the time.
Yeah, you've got a beard, you're hanging out, and you've even got a business in Vermont.
Yeah, we're starting up a place called the Worthy Burger, grass-fed burgers from local farms right around the pub, and craft beer.
All right. We also have Christian DeBenedetti.
Say nice. That three times, man.
Three times.
Who's one of my favorite beer writers, and you're part of something new called the Weekly Pint.
Yeah, that's right. Weekly Pint. We just launched in the end of January. Really excited about it. It's basically, the idea is to push, you know, emails out to craft beer lovers, new and converted and old, and talk about craft beer in all of its forms. And so you sign up, it's free, you get emails from me twice a week, and we're really, really excited. The reach has been incredible the first couple of months. I think we're, across all our platforms, reaching about 50,000 people, so it's really fun. And a lot of great fans out there, like, interacting, and we're starting to promote events and pour beer and do all sorts of different fun stuff.
How many people do we reach, Jimmy?
2,000.
Okay.
2 million.
From UK.
We need to tie in with these guys.
I know, Weekly Pint, man. Well, I mean, why the Weekly Pint? I mean, is there a need for, like, is it a national website?
Well, you know, it's everywhere, I guess. You know, anywhere where there's craft beer culture, we want to reach out to and interact with people who love beer as much as I do. And we're trying to cover everything at once. That's a little bit of a challenge. But I've faced that kind of a challenge before doing beer writing. But the idea is short, digestible pieces of information on craft beer. And we're looking at individual beers, beer styles, you know, food and beer pairings, giant events. One of the latest topics was the Firestone Walker Invitational, which, you know, we're all really excited about. It's just going to be an amazing gathering out there.
When is that again?
It's in June, and I think there's some more tickets, you know, available, but they're keeping it small. They're bringing in brewers. There's going to be incredible food there. It's just, you know, it's got all the elements of a perfect beer festival. So that's why one of the things we were enthused to write about recently.
All right. And how are the sales on your book going?
Everyone here needs to buy a copy immediately.
Was that last year?
Okay. It's good. Thanks for asking. It came out in the end of September, or September 6th. And, you know, it's one of those things, you never know what to expect when you do a publishing project. You have absolutely no idea. I went into it with really modest expectations, and I've been really, really excited to see how it's going. It's in a fourth printing now, so I think that kind of blew everyone away involved in the publishing aspect of it. So, you know, I'm out there doing more events, doing a dinner tonight at DBGB. And events down in D.C. at Pizzeria Paradiso, and at the...
So what are you doing at the events? Is it just speaking? Are you doing pairings?
Yeah, you know, I mean, mainly drinking beer. That's the real reason we like to get together, but, you know, that keep it casual. But, you know, I talk a little bit about the book, a little bit about beer travel, which is one of my big motto, you know, things that I love to do and talk about. So we eat and drink, and, you know, I like to talk with people and hear where they travel for beer and recent beers they've tried that they love.
Let's go to your book, because your book's awesome. Plug your book. Thank you. Tell us the name of your book.
Thanks. The Great American Ale Trail. It is a guide to beer culture across the country. So it's, you know, breweries, beer bars, festivals, you know, beer you know, profiles of great beer people, innovators. It came out 6 months ago, and you can find it on Amazon or any independent bookstore, preferably. Of course, The Blind Tiger is the longest entry in the book, I'm glad to say.
Unfortunately, about our troubles.
But the game,
at least
we're in there.
The other big story this week, the real story, is that Blind Tiger is 15 years old. Woo-hoo. And Chris O'Leary in a BrewYorkNewYork.com, he did an interview with you, or did he do an interview with you? He wrote about the trials you guys went through
right.
in 15 years and
yeah.
how you guys almost didn't get open in a new location, yeah, almost didn't get a license.
I try not to remember about all yeah. that stuff. Sort of blocked it out. But no,
it's like the real world of
yeah.
talking about real world of bars. We've got Justin Israelson from Sycamore, which is a great bar in Brooklyn, and Daniel Cafaro and Benjamin Stutz from Brooklyn Homebrew, which is an awesome homebrew store. Hey guys, how are you?
Hello,
we're great.
So now that everyone's here, we can keep talking. So we've got a lot of people in this room right now.
Yeah, actually, I just wanted to ask Christian real quick, like, how much time do you spend on the road traveling? I know you live in Portland, Oregon area.
I do. I live out in the wine country outside of Portland
yep.
and a little farmhouse. I travel a lot. I'm on the road every month, at least once or twice. Sometimes this is like a chunk of time for a week, but I get to as many events as I can. So it was awesome to be invited here today. I'm really psyched I could, you know, come and drink beer with you guys this afternoon.
What are some of the trends in the Pacific Northwest going on in beer, since we don't get there very much?
Okay, well, that's a good question. There's a lot going on. As you guys, you know, you've probably all been to Portland at least once. We have 54 breweries, I think, in the city right now. So it's pretty much, you know, throw a pint glass and you're going to hit a brewmaster. It's there's stuff going on all over the city right now. One of the cool things is a fruit beer festival shaping up at Burnside Brewing Company. Those guys are awesome. They're bringing, I think, 25 different breweries, all making fruit beer, almost all from the West Coast, or predominantly West Coast. So that's really cool, because it's, you know, you might think, oh, IPA festival or stout festival or some major style, but they've kind of leapfrogged out to do an entire festival on fruit beers. All of the kegs blew last year in the first couple hours, so they're greatly expanding it. So I recommend people travel out to Portland for that. I think it's going to be really special.
Cool.
Wow. All right. Tell me about Vermont, because you have a nice section in your book about Vermont, and I want Dave to talk more about Vermont.
Yeah, that's Dave's.
Well, no, I mean, it's there's a lot going on up there, and a lot of great brewers in a very small place, so they really stand out even more. We've just been really lucky. I mean, in the 10 years that I've been, that I've had a home there, it's really changed quite a bit from where it was before, so we're pretty lucky. Now the whole farming element seems to be coming in, which is happening all over the country, but particularly up there, because we have a lot of farmland, and growing a lot of hops, now growing barley. So yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff going on.
And there was hurricane.
It felt like an earthquake.
Tell me more.
It looks like there was an earthquake.
Vermont?
Yeah, Hurricane Irene came through late August, wiped out a lot of farms, a lot of buildings, a lot of roads, bridges. Most of the roads and bridges are back. Most of the farms, I think, are back too. But they're still recovering for sure. I think you'll see sort of by the end of this summer people sort of getting back on their feet, you know, once they can start farming again and making some money. But yeah, it's been a tough winter, I think, for a lot of people.
What are some of the places that you liked in Vermont?
Well, you know, there's so many good spots, as Dave points out. Obviously, Hill Farmstead is making great beer these days. You know, incredible stuff. Like pretty much everything Sean Hill puts in a bottle, I've loved. And, I know they're growing really fast, so that's really exciting. Also, The Alchemist, I understand they had some damage during the...
Well, they lost the brew pub.
Yeah.
And but they had just, the same week that we had the hurricane, they opened up their new production facility right next to Ben & Jerry's, where they are making just Heady Topper.
In
16-ounce cans. Yep.
Okay.
And it's been doing, I mean, they actually doubled their fermentation capacity already, and it's just keeps selling out. Every time they beef up production, they sell more cans. So it's going really well. The space that they actually owned, the building that where they were in with the brew pub, so because they couldn't put a brewery back in there, they weren't allowed to open up the restaurant, because that's illegal in this country. So they rented it to a friend of all of us, this guy Chad Rich, and he opened up Prohibition Pig, which is a Barbecue and 24 Taps.
I like the name.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was originally, the concept was supposed to be a distillation pub, but, you know, you go into the old Alchemist, you have to do beer. So, but it's been packed since he opened. You know, people are really excited to have it back. So.
All right. And what are you doing tomorrow at Blind Tiger?
We've got our 14th annual Vermont Beer and Cheese Festival. I think we've got about 16 beers, four from Hill Farmstead. We've got the Heady Topper on draft.
What time do you open?
Which is pretty rare. I think the kegs will actually be on around 1 o'clock.
See you there.
And then some Lawson too, which is, we haven't mentioned Sean, but Sean Lawson's doing some great stuff too. So,
all right. Well, hey, you guys can join in too. You guys are putting on Brooklyn Ward again for the second year. So tell us about that, because talking about Portland festivals, you know, you've got your Fruit Beer Fest. Well, we've got these awesome homebrew festivals in New York City. Homebrew Alley had like over 600 entries this year. And you guys, Brooklyn Ward, what year is this now?
I think it's the second year. I think this is the fifth one we're doing.
Fourth.
Am I correct?
Fourth incarnation.
It's the fourth. Yeah. It's the fourth one we're doing. Every single one has sold out so far. They go really, really well. We kind of have been changing it up every single time, trying to make it better and better. Tickets went on sale a few days ago, and they're almost sold out already, so buy them soon.
Yeah, we actually we grew out of our space, so we're now at a public assembly this year. But it's been excellent to see the crowd that's turned out. We actually had 125 entrants.
Wow.
And we actually had them this time send in their bottles, and we tasted all of their beers, and we elected the top 25 to enter in so we can make sure that there's just great beer going around.
So you're going to have just the top 25 beers?
Just the top 25,
at this event.
But it's actually, they didn't have to enter in their beers. Thank you. They didn't have to enter in their beers. They could enter in whatever they wanted to enter, and the top 25 of those got picked, and now they can make the same beer or anything that they wanted to make.
Wow.
And then we also have our friends from the Fat Beak Beagle that are going to pull up their truck. It's North Carolina barbecue food. So there'll be plates of barbecue just going around that day as well.
So as a fest, I mean, if I didn't know what I was getting into, is it just like a regular beer fest, or is there something different about
it? It's a little bit like a regular beer fest. Your ticket gets you a plate of food. You get to taste all 25 of the beers, and then you'll actually have the opportunity to judge and pick your favorite beer out of the 25. So there's a People's Choice winner, and then there's also a Judge's Choice. There's a total of $1,000 worth of prize money.
And you guys are cool. I mean, you guys, Justin from Sycamore, you have like a very cool bar.
Very cool.
Tell us, did you start Booking War at, it was originally at your bar,
yeah,
wasn't
so
it?
My partner and I, Gary, who unfortunately can't make it today because he's about to have a baby any minute now. But we came up with this idea 2 years ago and immediately approached Ben and Danielle. And they had just, I mean, their shop had been open for probably 6 months or to a year at that point. Mm-hmm. And they loved the idea, and we just we kind of started working together, and we just have all grown together, and we're now partners on this, and it's been a really fun ride. We've learned a lot from since day one.
Why don't you tell us about your bar, which is a little different from some other bars?
Yeah, it's a little different. So it's a flower shop and a bar, and we also have a little venue space downstairs where we do tastings, beer tastings, whiskey tastings. We are also big whiskey advocates, so we have about like close to like 100 whiskeys all across the board, but primarily American. So we do a ton of like just crazy whiskey tastings throughout the winter. And we've got a great garden space, so it's a fun place to hang out.
So what made you think of doing a flower shop and a bar together? Like that just
that I'm gonna have to that was
that's the best question.
Yeah,
I have.
Right.
In many months.
Gary's wife, Allison, I have to say, it can take the credit for that. But we always wanted to keep the business open as long as possible. And we were trying to think of what would go best with beer and whiskey in our minds.
Flowers.
Flowers.
Of course.
All right.
I love
it. And then Ben and Danielle, you guys have Brooklyn. It's homebrew. Tell me the name of it. There's so many Brooklyn homebrew.
Still
type.
Can't tell the difference by now.
Brooklyn homebrew.
Brooklyn homebrew.
Brooklyn homebrew.
www.brooklynhomebrew.com.
That's so hard to remember.
Well, there's a lot of things that start with Brooklyn. Let's put it that way.
It's a brand now.
We do. We're going on our third year now. It's been really awesome so far. We're planning a little bit of expansion this year, which we'll make announcements about soon. We've had a very busy year so far.
Well, tell us about the expansion.
It's not top secret, right?
Well, we just signed a lease. We're mainly just trying to expand on the space that we have right now. We need warehouse space just because it's really hard for us to keep up. And, you know, we do run out of stuff often, and we want to sort of not run out of stuff quite as often. And then we're going to start doing online sales. So hopefully we'll be a big East Coast homebrew supplier. That's our goal anyway.
And Ben, you said before the show that you're going to be selling 500 rhizomes.
Yeah.
Hop rhizomes.
You know, people love to grow stuff in New York despite the challenges. So
have you had people like in the past asking you for that? Is that why you got some?
Yeah, we've had them every year that we've been in business, but usually only several dozen, and they sell out in a few days. So we found a good source at a good price, and maybe 10 or 15 different varieties of hops, something like that.
I was going to say, which ones do well down here in New York City?
Cascade definitely does the best.
Yeah,
of all of them. Yeah,
you know,
that's the same in Vermont.
Really
same,
well.
Same. Yeah, it's Nugget, Cascade, and actually most of the sea hops do pretty well.
Yeah, yep. That makes sense.
Centennial, Columbus,
Hollertau. We've had really good luck with.
Really,
but it was Staten Island Hollertau. Yeah. A friend has a backyard just infested essentially with Hollertau hops, so he dug up some rhizomes. Mark Zapp, who was here.
Yeah, we know Mark Zapp. Yeah,
he brought us a bag full of trimmings. And they do really well. They're acclimated to the environment, I guess. So
have you been making some beers, or have you been tasting some beers that have been made with some of these hops? Like, how have they been?
They were good. You did Bohemian Lager.
Vienna Lager.
Vienna
turned
Lager.
Out
That's
really
right.
Well. They're not ideal. You know, I have a lot to learn about growing hops and
the
harvesting them properly. And yeah, but.
Oh, and we had the hurricane, and the hurricane knocked all the hops off.
Yeah, that's what happened to us, too. Came at the worst possible time.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to give a shout out to our sponsors. Thank you to greatbrews.com. Thank you to our supporter, goodbrewseal.com. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to our sponsor, greatbrewers.com. They bring you the beer cloud. Check it out, greatbrewers.com. And Good Brewer Seal, you know, this summer, July Good Brewer Month, it's going to be our 2009, 10, 11, 12, fourth summer. Usually, Mayor Bloomberg will give us the proclamation.
Yeah, we need the proclamation.
And there's a lot of things in the works this year, so check out goodbrewerseal.com. A lot of new things happening this year. All right, here we are with the awesome crew at Beer Sessions Radio. And the guys from, I'm going to call you guys Brooklyn Wart because it's easier to remember. BrooklynWart.com. You guys gave us a homebrew. What is it?
We
the
did.
First one.
The
what
first,
was the
one,
first
was,
one
was an English bitter, maybe a little bit past its prime. And then the second one you're drinking now is just an oatmeal stout.
So at Brooklyn Homebrew, you guys do classes too, don't you?
We're doing classes. We've been doing them since August. They've done really, really well. We've sold out almost every single one of them. We do a beginner's class and an all-grain class. We only charge $35 for our classes. We want to keep it super affordable, and we want everybody to kind of have a chance. They're pretty small classes, not too big. We do about 10 to 15 people. They last about 2 hours. We do them on Wednesday nights. Yeah, and they're great so far.
Yeah, Kyler, he's the main instructor. He does an awesome job. I have to thank him for that. He's won many, many awards for his homebrew. He really knows what he's doing and makes it approachable. And David and Bahia help him out. So.
Let's do this. Portland versus Brooklyn.
Uh-oh.
Which has the... Just try to compare the homebrew scenes, because I really think that separate from craft beer culture, I think that Brooklyn has a pretty damn good homebrew scene.
I would assume Portland does too, although I have no idea.
I think we're still catching up, though.
I think we're still a bit behind.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard to say.
You know, there's years, there's number of people, there's number of shops, but who's counting really? As long as people are homebrewing, that's the important thing, you know, and trying stuff out. I do know the Oregon Brew Crew is a pretty awesome group of guys, and Steinbart's, the company, if you ever get a chance to visit Portland, you got to go to Steinbart's. It's the one of the oldest homebrew shops in the country, and owned by a Shirttail relative of mine, actually. His name's John DiBenedetti, but our great grandfathers were brothers or something like that. But he's a great guy, and the Brew Crew is really, really active in helping innovate. They also compete to do a pilot brew with Widmer every year, and they call it the Collaborator Series. So that's really cool. So, you know, but I'm psyched to see. I moved away from Brooklyn 2 years ago when there weren't homebrew shops or just the beginning, I think, of the first couple of shops. So I'm super psyched to see them here now. You know, and it's fun to come back. Every time I come back to New York, something new and cooler is here than was before. So,
yeah, it is actually really amazing to see. When we first did the Brooklyn Mort, we were, like, crossing our fingers to get brewers to sign up, like, let alone not even the people to arrive. But nowadays, it's like the brewers just, like, they're coming out in droves.
That's great. I want to come to this festival.
And who's judging this year?
So we got judges from all across the board. There's Justin from Beer Table. There's, as far as, like, people, like, we've got, like, Six Point has a judge involved, Brooklyn Brewery, Barrier, Kelso, Beercraft, the judge. We always let the winner from the last work come in and judge as well. Mary from
who won last year?
Last year was
I
believe his name was Chris Leverich. Yes, Chris Leverich with his Earl Grey wit beer. It was actually really awesome, and he's awesome.
Does he live in Brooklyn?
He does. He lives in Bay Ridge. Wow. Science teacher.
And then if you win, does someone get to make that beer at a commercial brewery or anything like that?
We don't. We've sort of like played around with that idea, and it's something we might consider adding in the future. Yeah. It would definitely, you know, up the ante a little bit, I think.
But in the past, I think it was the first year we did this, the winner, his beer was produced at Greenport Harbor that I think you had at Jimmy's.
Yeah. Greg was the winner of the very
summer
first
season.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He was non-professional.
Yeah, Greenport Harbor
out
in North Fork. Yeah.
He became an apprentice there shortly after winning, and then they started producing his beer there.
And now he's a badass.
Yeah.
Wow. That's so cool. Yeah. It's like these little, you know, snapshots of all these cool scenes. Yeah. But want you to tell us more. Come on. Christian DiBenedetti.
This sounds like
the Weekly Pint. Tell us some stories you've written. Is this an interesting story? Would you write about
this?
First
of all, yeah, that sounds like a perfect kind of thing for Weekly Pint. You know, we're covering everything in beer culture. So, you know, I hope people will sign up. It's so easy. You just go to weeklypint.com. Hit your email address and boom, there you go. We're also, you know, we're giving away tickets, we're giving away things related to the beer world, so that's a lot of fun. But yeah, you know, we're trying to cover everything from homebrew culture on up to, you know, craft beer and all of its iterations. You know, because it's an incredibly diverse world, as you guys know. So it's beer travel, it's, you know, it's beer dinners, it's everything.
Tell me a story.
Okay.
The one that's out now, it's like the barrel something.
Today, yeah, we did barrel-aged beers today. So we focused on a couple of nice ones. The Stoic from Deschutes. You know, these beers came out in the winter of 2011, but there's still some around. And my idea is that, you know, it's not too warm out yet to be drinking barrel-aged beers. You know, I'm not ready. I don't know about you guys, but I'm not ready to see this transition into summer beers already. Like, I feel like the shelves are filling up with spring and summer beers already. And I'm not mentally there yet. Especially when it's 31 degrees, you know, in New York this morning. So I like to drink barrel-aged beers, you know, year-round, but especially when it's colder out. So, you know, we focus on a couple today, and, you know, we'll do something wildly different next on Thursday. I guess we have a focus on a really exciting brewery coming up, Anchorage Brewing Company up in Anchorage, which I visited for my book. And again,
I was just about to ask you if you'd either been up to see Gabe or we had him actually via telephone.
Oh, nice!
And more and more of his stuff is coming into the market in bottles.
I love that guy. I think his beer is fantastic, and you know, visiting that brewery was one of the highlights of my entire year for the book. So I'm really excited to see his beers getting a wider audience, and the collaboration beer with Dogfish was incredible. So yeah, he'll be featured on the Weekly Pine coming up, and you know, who knows what we're going to do twice a week and grow it as much as we possibly can, and you know, try to be like the thrill list of craft beer. Or
are you writing the stories?
I'm writing everything. I mean, I've edited a couple, but so far I'm responsible for writing and editing all the content, which keeps me on my toes. So
Christian knows beer. I will say that.
Thanks.
And I really enjoyed your book. Again, tell me the name.
The Great American Ale Trail.
It's on my shelf. I look at it when I'm thinking, oh, I might go to San Francisco. I pull out your beer, I mean your book, and I read through San Francisco.
Yeah, there's a good stained copy laying around at Jimmy's, I hope. So
ours is pretty stained, too.
Okay. That was the idea. I hope people kind of, you know, I hope they have to buy a replacement eventually, you know.
And did you, your first beer writing, was it for Men's Journal magazine, the beer issue that they do, or had you already done a bunch of stuff before that?
No. My very first article goes back to Brewing Techniques magazine, which it's just gone now, unfortunately. Some of you guys might remember it, but it was this incredibly
cool.
Ben,
did you ever see that magazine?
I did. I think the publication ended right when I was getting into this business, so familiar with it.
It was so far ahead of its time. You know, a great magazine. It was published in Eugene, Oregon, and great writing, really in-depth articles. So my first article was about Orval back in 98, I guess. But eventually moved to New York, started writing about beer for Men's Journal and a lot of other magazines. And now I work for Food and Wine and a lot of different mags. So, but there wasn't as much of a call for beer writing in national magazines, 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. It's really changed. And while we're on that topic, unless someone else is planning to, I want to recognize that it's Michael Jackson's birthday today. Right. So we should all raise our
cheers to that.
To Michael.
To him, the master.
Cheers.
Why don't you say a few words about him, Christian?
Oh,
I've read his book.
Oh, I mean,
one of the old books.
The books are amazing. I know which one. I think he published 16 books, one on whiskey, one on there was some kind of a cocktail or bar guide. But, you know, I was one of the many people who was lucky enough to meet him and be influenced by him. So, you know, I miss him every day. Every time I work on a beer article, I think about him.
Wow, that's brilliant. Do you guys have, at Brooklyn Homebrew, do you guys have any books about beer or homebrew?
Many books about beer.
What are some of the best-selling ones? Like, what are people buying
best-selling
now?
Almost every single brewer buys The Joy of Homebrewing. That's definitely the first book.
Charlie
almost
just like...
Or How to Brew, but usually it's The Joy of Homebrewing.
That's pretty amazing.
I think it's because it's Charlie orange,
Papazian.
Bright orange. Yeah, Charlie Papazian. We've got a lot of really good new books out right now. Joshua Bernstein, who was here last week, we had him come in and do a little book signing, and his book's been selling pretty well.
His book is really good.
How about that couple that did, I think it was like, you know, doing all grain on your like kitchen stovetop?
Yeah, we sell their book, and that book is fantastic, actually.
Yeah, what was that called again?
What is it called? It's called Beer Craft. That's it. Will Bostwick, and I can't remember her name.
I actually bought that book and used it.
It's a really good book.
Producer, what's the name of that book?
Beer Craft?
Yeah, it's Beer Craft.
Beer Craft.
Yeah, that's Jesse Rymill.
Jesse Rymill.
That's the lady's name.
And Will Bostwick.
Yes.
Beer Craft.
And it is a great book, and I've still not had the opportunity to actually tell them that I think it's a great book, so I hope they're listening tonight. But yeah, there are a lot of 1 gallon brewers in the city now, so we always direct them towards that book because it's extremely educational and just very well put together.
Yeah, very easy to read.
Yeah, very easy to read.
Mm-hmm. So at the Brooklyn Wart that's coming up, is it more just individuals represented, or are many of them also part of like homebrew clubs? Because I know there's a huge explosion of homebrew clubs just in the city. That's what I'm trying to pit Brooklyn against Portland, because maybe we're going to have a East versus West Coast
smackdown.
You know? Come on.
Oh, yeah. That,
think big, guys.
There have
we need
been,
more beer first.
There has been talk about even an East Coast Homebrewers Association, almost just because they feel underrepresented, I guess. But more than that, I think there's just the natural rivalry between the West Coast and the East Coast. And, you know, the East Coast brewers want to flex their muscle. But yeah, there's a lot of crossover. A lot of the competitors, I know their beers that they got them into the Brooklyn Wort in the qualifying round. I know they won awards with them in Homebrew Alley. You know, some people go to the Homebrewers Guild meetings, the Brooklyn Bruisers, Malted Barley Appreciation Society. They may just go to the homebrewers meetup at Beer Table on Mondays, last Monday of every month, I believe. And there seems to be more clubs kind of popping up.
Does
all
a
the
club
time.
Meet at Sycamore?
A club does not meet at Sycamore, no. If you go back to the SmackDown, the one thing that we are actually working on is we're going to, after this Brooklyn Mort, we're actually working on a Manhattan Mort. So we're trying to get all the boroughs involved, and hopefully we can grow it to like a Brooklyn Mort, a Manhattan Mort, a Queens Mort, Staten Island Mort, and then that's when the SmackDown starts beginning.
All right.
Until we're covered with warts.
Wow, homebrewing.
When is that the Wort again, the Brooklyn Wort?
It's on April 28th.
And April 28th.
Yeah, I was going to invite you guys. You guys are more than welcome to come. We'd love to have you. So we can exchange information.
Sounds really cool.
Well, sweet. All right, we're going to take a short break. Before we do that, don't cut off yet. Thanks to greatbrewers.com. And Beer Sessions Radio is a media sponsor for Brooklyn Wort.
Yes, there.
So, all right, we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
You know you make me wanna shout. Look, my hands jumping. Look, my heart's bumping. Throw my head back. Come on now, don't forget to say you will. Yeah, don't forget to shout. Yeah, 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 yeah. Say you will. Throw your head back, baby. Come on, come on.
Say you will.
Throw your head back.
Woo.
Come on now. Say that you love me. Say that you need me. Say that you want me. Ain't gonna be me. Come on now. Come on now. Come on now.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm here with Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger.
Actually, Jimmy, I got to give a quick shout out to one of the beers we have in tomorrow's event, Vermont Beer and Cheese, was made by Justin Park, and he just had a baby girl, him and his wife Corinne, or not wife, girlfriend, they're not married yet, and named Annabelle, and one of the beers that he made is named Annabelle. Actually, it was named, they didn't know it was a boy or a girl, so they called, the beer was Annabelle Remy.
So who is this guy?
Those were the two names. He's the farmer brewer that I was talking about, who's going to be
in
growing
Vermont.
Grain in Vermont. And they just had a baby girl yesterday morning.
Congratulations.
Are they going to be malting grains or just
they're going to
be malting?
Nope. They're going to. In fact, he went to the grain conference. We have an annual grain and hops conference up in Vermont through UVM. And he went to that this year. And he's already got 10 acres tilled. And
great.
He's going to start doing it. Yeah. And he's already figuring out the whole. He met the woman from Valley Malt.
Yeah. We sell their products, actually.
Yeah, so he's sort of been talking to her.
Yeah.
Wow. So how did you guys get started anyways? I mean, you have like a very cool store. Danielle, you're a home brewer?
I'm a home brewer, yes.
Were you a home brewer before you had the store?
I was a chef before the store.
So tell us how you got started. Give us a little bit about Danielle.
We were both chefs for a very long time, about, I think, 8 years or so.
It's not that long, I guess, really.
Well, it seemed like
forever. In the scheme of things.
So we were chefs for a long time. We both went to school to be chefs. We brewed while we were chefs, just kind of as a hobby on the side. And moved to New York and... There was nowhere here to buy ingredients, so we'd always just order online. And we're both a little tired of working in kitchens, and it can be exhausting. And, you know, we kind of wanted to own our own place. That was really what we wanted. And
yeah, we were kind of envious of Justin at Beer Table.
Yeah,
we,
Justin we had just opened a beer table, and we loved it. And I still love Beer Table. It's still, like, my favorite bar in the city, I think, by far. And, yeah, it was just not easy to get bank loans at that time at all. There was no way we were going to get money to open a restaurant or a bar.
We were broke because we worked in kitchens.
Because we were chefs, so we had no money. So we decided to try a homebrew shop, and we started super, super small in our apartment, and we were just selling yeast at first. You know, we sold off our first batch of yeast that we got within a week or two, and, you know, it was almost like an investment for us, and it helped us to, you know, very slowly grow. And 6 months after being in our apartment and pretty much building a full store in our apartment, we then signed a lease on a space and opened in the Gowanus.
We never could have done it if there wasn't, you know, already a thriving homebrew scene here. Like, there were homebrewers here. They just kind of were hiding. They weren't out in the open because there wasn't a local source, I think. So they all just really supported us from the start, and it made it very easy to grow quickly. So
it was funny, in the mid-90s there were a couple of homebrew shops. Mm-hmm. I think in Manhattan there was one up by Rock Center,
a little shop. Mm-hmm. Of hops.
Yep.
Was in the Village, I think,
right? Yep. And then there was something down on Spring Street too, like a winemaking / homebrew shop, and then they all just sort of disappeared.
Yeah.
And there was
Manhattan
nothing for a while.
Rents are just out of control, and I mean, even Brooklyn rents can be out of control, but we're in the Gowanus, and rent is, it was cheap. I think it'll you know, quickly, it's quickly changing.
How many square feet is the store?
We only have 1,000, which is why we're expanding. It's not enough room for a homebrew shop. Everybody else in the country has a lot more room, which is why their stores are usually much bigger. But, you know, we make it work. We get fresh products every week, which I guess is a good thing that we turn our products over really quickly. But, you know, it can be hard having to constantly refill and get pallets every single week, tons and tons of pallets. So,
and in terms of what you guys sell, I mean, I know there's everything for home brewers.
Everything, all the equipment, all the ingredients.
What are the main things that people come in for?
Definitely equipment and definitely ingredients. I mean, you know, any regular home brewer is going to have most of the equipment other than like upgrades that they might make once in a while. But ingredients are definitely probably our biggest seller. So
do you help people with recipes? And
oh, yeah, definitely. We have a lot of our own recipes. I think our own recipe catalog is at least 50 different beers now, if not more.
Do people bring you samples and stuff of stuff they've made?
Yeah. Sometimes we get too many samples.
I was going to say, what's that like?
Sometimes it's amazing. It's sometimes we're just really troubleshooting, trying to help them figure out maybe what went wrong.
Are you brutally honest to them?
You got to be nice but honest.
Not to be brutal, but we try to be honest somewhere in between.
Maybe you should buy some more ingredients and try that again.
Yeah.
And what about equipment? What's like the top equipment you sell?
Glass carboys, you know, a fermenter.
Actually, bottles are probably our most popular seller, I'd have to say.
Anything glass that they give away or break. we're part hardware store, part grocery store. You know, we have a lot of plumbing parts and random pieces of hardware.
Lots of trinkets.
Yeah.
And then from malt, where do you only buy malt from Valley Malt, or you buy?
No, Valley Malt is just one of the many places that we get malt from. Most of them are European brands, Crisp and Wireman and Castle. And then as far as American, there's Breese and Rar. And then Valley Malt is a little bit, they're new to the sort of homebrew world, at least in the past year or so. And even they are so busy now that they can barely keep up with their business. So they're expanding also this year.
And what beer are we drinking? So you made this beer that we're drinking?
Yeah, we guys are drinking an oatmeal stout. Very high percentage of golden naked oats, which is just a type of malted, dehusked oat. Naked oats. Yep. They kind of taste like sunflower seeds when you eat them by themselves. But they make beer just a little bit creamy, maybe slightly nutty.
And what's his third one?
Oh, it's just the first one again. We only brought two types.
Oh.
We've come full circle.
Actually, this bottle's a little better than the first
one. Yeah, see, that's what's exciting about homebrewing is that we don't have a laboratory to help, you know, our quality control. So sometimes one bottle is going to taste far different than the other bottle.
It tastes like an ESB.
Something must have gotten into the other bottle.
I need more beer. And I came to the show today. I hadn't had a beer since Saturday.
Wow.
And I was like, this isn't right.
Terrible.
So I had a beer before I came on. Okay. In case anybody's wondering.
Good work. I wanted to ask Dave a little bit about the farm brewery bill. There's some bills going around in the Northeast. Maybe you guys know a little more about it than I do, but I've been seeing bills about state legislatures, you know, making it possible for farmers more profitable for farmers to grow and create farm breweries. And that's super exciting to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think I heard about the thing in Massachusetts. I don't know about, I don't know if there's anything in Vermont. I know we have like an enterprise bill, like a farming enterprise, but it's not specifically aimed at, I mean, brewing is part of it, very small part of it, but it's more just getting young farmers back in the land.
Danielle, know about New York, right?
Yeah, there was one in New York that was just introduced. I think it was introduced by Chuck Schumer, who I met when I was a little kid. and it's essentially just, it would state that anybody who buys New York State grains can have a brewery, essentially a farm brewery, I think is becoming popular all over
New York
country.
I think New York's going to be the leader in that way. The big thing is that if you buy New York State grains and hops, you can actually sell retail.
Yep.
At a farmer's market.
Yep,
and then the green market, which is in New York, which is higher standards, if you actually grow your own grains and hops, you know, I think it's 50% now, then you can actually sell your beer at the green markets, which is the prime market in New York. So, you know, it's great, you know. There should definitely be, I think the trend will be more, we did an event called Farm Plus Beer Expo this spring. I think that more breweries will be buying, you know, at least in New York, you know, grains and hops that are grown here. And there's a potential for that. It's really going to help the state. And I think the beers will be better, too.
Yeah, I mean, New York used to be the biggest producer of hops in the country, you know, back in the 1800s.
Yeah, I think all they need is more things. Like, they need another really good malt facility.
Right.
You know?
The malting is a big question, isn't it? There's a guy out in Oregon in the Willamette Valley named Zach Christensen, who is starting little micro maltings, which is great because we have, of course, we have hop country out there in the Willamette Valley and incredible stands of hops, and winter barley grows really well in the Willamette Valley. So this guy's, we're really excited to see his progress, so we can start getting some, you know, malted grains right out of the Willamette Valley too.
Yeah, I think there's like three small, you know, like valley malt size maltsters in the country now. One in Colorado, maybe that one, and then and then the one in Hadley.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, it's like the building block of beer. Do you guys think there'd be a huge market if there were more malt facilities making more local grains?
I think so. Our customers really want valley malt barley, but because they're small and they also service a lot of great breweries, you know, it's hard for them to keep up with demand. But I think even politicians like Chuck Schumer, they're recognizing that it's one of the few American industries that's is growing as a manufacturing industry, whereas so many other ones are being sent elsewhere. You know, it's a great source of revenue. It's you know, creates jobs. It's one
so
of the
people want local malt.
Yeah,
they would like that.
Definitely.
Cool. And what about Sycamore? What do you got? You guys, other than organizing Broken Wart, are you tight with the beer community?
I would say so. Yeah. All of our good friends that we are talking about ideas with are all involved in this community. From Ben and Danielle to our friends at Barrier to whatever it is. But yeah, I mean, we're very into just beer from everywhere from around the world, craft beer in the States and so forth. So. We aren't. Unfortunately, we're not brewers. We've tried a few times, and we're not really proud of what we've come out with. And we've tried to share with some people, and they weren't that proud either. So we leave it to the professionals.
Nowhere to go but up.
Yeah, exactly.
Since you've organized Brooklyn Wart, how hard would it be to organize a Brooklyn versus Portland? You know, it could be a small scale thing, some type of homebrew event.
Well, we should talk with Christian. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I mean, the guys are all good natured. I'm sure they'd be up for the challenge. So, you know, we should figure it out.
I think beer sessions could throw $100 into that or something. Like that. We're good for that.
I would like to do that. That would be fun. Then we'd have to go to Portland, and Portland can come here, you know?
Well, yeah, maybe we meet in like a middle ground, like the Blind Tiger or something like that, or Chicago. Yeah.
South Dakota.
Manhattan's the middle ground between Brooklyn and Portland.
Right,
exactly.
I'd rather go out to Portland. I think that'd be fun.
That might be fun.
Pretty nice in the summertime, I'll tell you what.
Maybe the weekly pint will do something. Okay, let's do this. Your favorite beer from the weekend, Dave Broderick.
Double Galaxy, Hill Farmstead.
Okay.
I've been drinking a lot of the Crossroads IPA this week.
I was at my parents' house on the Alabama border, so I drank lots of Guinness because there weren't a lot of options down there, but it was great.
The Nugget Nectar just came out, and it's tasting really good this year.
I'm liking the Stoic, the Deschutes Barrel Aged Quad that I put in the weekly pint today.
All right. And I had a Barrier Brewing is going to expand, so I think I have one more delivery coming this week before they shut down. They're going to get a little bigger. They're going to go from one barrel system to five barrel system. I had their beer, the Craven Red. It's like a light Belgian red ale. It's nice. It was really good. I drank that all weekend. Hell yeah.
I thought you didn't drink this weekend.
Well, through Saturday.
Okay. Come on.
I'm back. Don't worry. All right. Well, there's some more cool events coming up, too. We're going to be good buddies with the Brewers Association, which kind of supports all the different breweries. Do you have anything to say about the Brewers Association, Christian?
I think they're great. You know, they've been supporting everything I've worked on for a long time, and I'm really looking forward to their big events coming up this summer, the CBC in May in San Diego, and then, of course, the 31st Great American Beer Festival. That's going to be a hell of a good time.
One of their annual events is, have you ever been to Savor? Sever?
No, Sever. Yeah, no, I haven't. Sever. But I just saw that the tickets went on sale. So,
yeah, so it's an American craft beer and food experience. It's Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th at the National Building Museum in Washington, D.C. So go check it out. Savor? Savor. But Brewers Association is really important. I mean, you know, it's one reason we have such a great craft beer industry and the craft brewers conference. Is that what it's called?
Yep.
And coming up. There's so many things to learn about. But I would say also, you know, check out all these things about beer, but check out Weekly Pint, check out Brooklyn Wart, check out goodbrewseal.com, check out greatbrewers.com. There's some Good Beer Seal events coming up Thursday, March 28th. Trogues Brewery has a night at the Bronx Ale House. Check out our brothers in the Bronx. Founders Night at Bar Great Harry on Tuesday, April 3rd. Great beers including the Kentucky Breakfast Stout. And Friday, April 6th, our friends at the Double Windsor have the Brewery Night. And that's one of our favorite breweries from California. I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Sessions Radio is supported by the Good Beer Seal, goodbrewerseal.com. Thanks to Dave, Christian, Danielle, Ben, and Justin for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor, and guest coordinator, Brett Thompson. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Casually mention the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Vodka puts my mouth in gear. This little refrain should help me explain, as a matter of fact.